free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free!
Big welcome back to the Young Hearts Run Free podcast. We've had a slightly abbreviated introduction this week because we're a wee bit short of time. However, joining me straight for the red carpet, our finish line legend, Mr. John Cassidy. How was the fling?
Ding, ding, baby. It was an absolutely fantastic day out, man. Start to finish. Wee bit roasty toasty, but awesome to be on the West Highland Way. Couple of the recce runs done recently. It was kind of wheat. It was nice and dry on Saturday, but it was challenging all the same as it's going to be. I can't move my body 53 miles without feeling wee bits of pain here and there. But you know what? There was more smiles and laughter and fun. All the good stuff that ultra running's all about, Stevie Boy.
Superb. Well done from me and everybody, I'm sure, expresses
thank
their
you.
Delight because we were tracking you. We were following your progress. We were getting media sent to us and hopefully people saw that joy etched on your coupon, as they say. It certainly looked like you were having a broadie out. No sure how the drop bag table scavenging went, but we're going to hear all about it. But not the day.
Not the day. That's a story for another time, Stevie Boy.
People's shoulders have just dropped. They were all hoping for the immediate oomph. But you can look forward to that in a couple of weeks' time because John just needs to gather his thoughts, needs to reflect on his achievement on that 53 miles, the folk he come across, the experiences he had. It'll be all the richer in a couple of weeks' time when I grill the bastard.
I can't wait, man. Yes, so. But we did say season 10, unpredictable. And we're sticking with that theme, aren't we? So the fling story will be hanging about you very, very soon, but not today.
Not today. And if you're also in post-fling recovery mode or post-fling ultramarathon blues mode, yeah, just take a wee look back at last weekend or the weekend before last and be really, really ecstatic that you were able to partake, run, support, help and set your sights on your next big goal. However, we do have a extremely special guest joining us today. That fella is Bob Keenan, or Bob Keenan, as he prefers to be called, from Cumbernauld.
Aye. Bob's a character. That's one word you could use to describe him. A lovely, larger-than-life fella. We should maybe say, as we've done a few times before, careful where you're listening to this, eh? If you're in the car with your wains, then, or your bairns, then you might want to wait until they're not in the car with you, or put a pair of headphones on if you're going to be in a public place if you're listening to this, because there are a few expletives throughout. So that's it. That's your warning. You've been told. So, but the story Bob shares is one about, well, we can get a wee teaser, I suppose. It's one about addiction and abusing alcohol, abusing drugs, and then how running's played a massive part in Bob turning his and others' lives around as well. So it's a very, very powerful story and one that I was delighted to be able to hear firsthand.
Yeah, absolutely. A really personal story. And Bob gives us an open and honest account, both through some of his dark times, but also his enlightenment and his recovery as well. And he does it in a, like John said, larger than life style. You're going to love listening to Bob. We certainly did. And hearing all about his big recent achievement. So go enjoy this and we'll speak to you very soon about all the fling stuff.
Welcome to the Young Hearts Run Free podcast. Bob Keenan, how are you doing, Bob?
I'm not bad, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for joining us. Very much looking forward to hearing your story. So let's, for want of a better technical term, batter right in. Tell us what brought you into the world of running, Bob, your running story. What brought you up to today? Over to you.
Thanks, John. I'll come in with that now. So I was kind of mentioning affairs. I'm definitely not from a family of athletes. Far from it. A wee bit like the black sheep, or as Stephen says, the white sheep of the family. And that's the truth. You know, it's like I was never brought up with that kind of background around about athletics. But when I was a young boy, we used to play the game two-man hunt. And I was the guy on the team that would chase people down. So they would say to me, so my mates, I'd like a group of 10, 15, 20 pals, we'd all run about, young boys. And they would hate me because they caught me Bobby Battery Ass. I wouldn't stop till I caught them. So I kept going on and on and on. And I remember one of my mates, my good mate Chalk, he says to me, boy, I've grew up with since I was a boy. And he swore at me once. He's like, right, you bastard. He goes, if you don't get away from me, I'm going to punch your fucking head. Because that's the way I was. I had that competitive edge that I wouldn't stop till I caught people, you know. And that was a kind of the start to probably, like, I knew that there was a bit of potential there, you know what I mean, with running. But that was it. That was at near athletics club. Done a couple of the chapel where I stayed, I'm from Cumbernauld. I stay in a place then called Abraham Hill. And when I was a young boy, the chapel every year used to have a fun run. And when I used to do it, I was pretty good at it. So I would come in. I never always won it, but I was always placed quite high. So there was always a potentiality of running there. I just didn't know that I was going to eventually be no bad at it the older I got, you know.
What length was that fun run?
Oh, no, you're asking. I think maybe 2 mile at the most. It wasn't massive, but it was a yearly thing. But so I was all right at it, you know. I was no bad at it. I was never a sprinter, but I had the potentiality of a bit of distance, you know.
Two-man hunt, Bob. What did you call a two-man hunt in Lethem, Perth? I love those local games that got played.
It's escape me, man.
Nah, is it's it like treason?
Treason, that's it. That's the one, man. Treason, aye.
Treason
so
it was.
The thing with it was, one of you were hit and you kept going till you caught everybody. And once you caught somebody, they became the team. And then it was altered with nobody left, you know. So it was the same rules. Same thing, just a different area, didn't it?
Same rules as treason in Perth. And another rain. This is absolutely off this. What did you call it when you knock on somebody's door and then bolt? What did you call it?
So there was a couple of names. There was Chappie or Chapdoor Runaway, you know. There was an even more sinister game that we played. It was called Light a Shite. And what you would do is you'd put a shite, wrap it up, Chapdoor, then run away, and the guy would put the fire out and get his foot covered in shite, you know.
That was a popular one.
That was my darker times as a childhood, you know.
I think they tried that one with me in the London Marathon last week at one of the portals, to be honest, Bob. But aye, chappy in Perth for those listening. If you've got a wee game that you used to play as a tearaway teenager, then let us know on the socials. I love that. I love regional variations. Yeah, Chapdoor Runaway, they must have been really working hard at the marketing suite that day.
Absolutely.
Chapdoor Runaway. What are we going to call it? What about Chapdoor Runaway? Anyway,
and you always had this one guy that you knew that if you chapped his door, he was going to chase you. So the running came in to play again. Do you know what I'm saying? You had to get away from them. There was two guys. There was one called Psycho, but you knew you were always getting a chase. And the other guy was a guy called Gunyan, who I became pal of his sons, and they both of them always chased you. So that was the door you were chatting all the time.
That's exactly it. Maybe we could reintroduce it as some kind of tempo session.
Keep a new running game.
Oh, man. Anyway, that is a the usual type of story that we get at that question, Bob. But in terms of your then running, and then when you actually then took it up more as a sort of pastime and a pursuit rather than as a way to either chase folk or get chased, when was that and what did that look like for you?
So that's obviously a really good question. So what happened to me, I'll give you a wee kind of rundown before I get to that. So just like many young people run about where I stayed, you know, and very similar to Glasgow area, and it's probably central Scotland. I know Edinburgh and all, maybe Perth to a degree as well. But there was always a group of lads who jumped about in a certain area and they fought with guys who come from a different area. And what happened with me was, that was my experience. So I grew up with a lot of boys who did similar things, when that included drinking, recreational drug use, and a lot of fighting that went with that. So what happened was, abused alcohol. I started, I had a drink when I was 12 years old, but I didn't have a proper drink till I was 14. And then by the age of 21, I was by far a chronic alcoholic in the space of seven years, you know. That's the truth. And what happened with me was, because of the knock-on effect of that, I went and started to suffer for, like, obviously bad mental health, because you can't be doing the stuff I was doing. You know, I was abusing alcohol. I was abusing recreational drugs. No, at that time, really hard drugs. You know, the recreational drugs at the time were like kind of MDMA. There was stuff like speed kind of putting, and other drugs came out later on, was like cocaine and that. But at that particular time, it was mostly just alcohol and recreational drugs. But I abused them. You know, I've always had that personality. You know, it's, I actually find that with a lot of runners, that we've got that kind of addictive edge where we want to push ourselves and push ourselves. So I done it, I channeled it the wrong way, where I was doing stuff that was like abusive to me. And it wasn't just abusing me, it was, I was taking that out on other people. So I was not just hurting myself, I was hurting other people. But when the knock-on effect with that was when I was probably about the age of 19 to 21, my mental health started to go away, you know, really badly, where I was suffering from severe panic attacks for anxiety. And then every time I was kind of have to drink and other stuff, you know, I was really like, thought my heart was kicking in. I had a really, really bad experience with that. So I moved, I'd done the geographical change and I moved away. So my story was this. I stayed in Cumbernauld, grew up with Cumbernauld, jumped about in this area called Abraham Hill. And the local young team for there used to fight the other young teams, and a lot of violence back and forward. And it was serious, you know, people got hurt. You know, this is the truth. And there was actually a situation. I was on another podcast about a few months ago talking about the gang culture and that. And it was dangerous, you know, people. There was a particular case where somebody died, you know, and it was all down to, you know, somebody about to get hurt with a sword and eventually come back and hurt this other person. And the person died. And I'm not going to glory detail, but it was horrendous. Round about that time, I knew that it was a problem with my drinking. I knew it was a problem with my drug taking, but I didn't know really what to do with it. So what I did is I done a geographical change. So I knew that Cumbernauld at that time wasn't serving me well because the people I was hanging about with. And the people hanging about me to this day, a lot of them are still my pals, but I don't associate with them, if that makes sense, because the people that hang about me today are positive, productive role models. You know, a lot of people in the running community, people that I associate with on a daily basis, you know, I know the similar people that I used to grow up with, but there are a lot of positive people that I still see who are in that community. And I'm very, very influential with helping people run about recovery, which I'll get to later on in the podcast. Mm-hmm. So the running journey started for me is when I moved. I'd done a geographical change, and you'll laugh at this, you know. I heard some really great geographical changes. I heard about people going to, you know, London, people going to Manchester, people going abroad to Australia, you know, people going to America. I moved to Arbroath, you know, because my granny's died up there. And as much as it's Arbroath's not the most greatest destination to go to, it was a safe place for me. So I went to Arbroath and I stayed with my gran for about a year. And I remember this, that woman's influence on me to this day is absolutely awesome. You know, she kept saying to me, because she knew at this time I was going to see a doctor with my mental health. I was no wanting to drink, but I was still kind of flirting with drink on and off, so I was still suffering a bit. And she says to me, you know, the best thing for your mental health, son, is to go out and run. So that's what I did. And I started running. You know, I started running, started off with maybe running a mile, running 2 miles. And then after a period of time staying in Arbroath, there was a local running club, the Arbroath Footers. And I went and joined them for a bit. And when I joined them, I noticed a wee bit of talent there, because the two Mondays came back to help me, you know. They're running the stuff that I used to do when I was younger. There was a bit of potentiality there. And I think eventually I did my first 10K with it. They are both with the Footers, and I think I ran 37 minutes, 58 or something. It's run about that, 58, 59. So it was quite a good time for somebody that's first done his first ever 10K. You know, no world record level, but, you know, for that, for somebody just took the sport up, you know, I knew there was a bit of potentiality there, and that's probably how I started running. And it's kind of I've been on and off running ever since then. I think I was running about 21, I'm 44 now, so I've been running for quite a long time now. Eh?
John.
What's your granny's name?
Granny, my wee granny Kathy. She's still going strong today. She's 87. So I've got two grandwains now. So she's now a great great granny to them, like five generations. You know, it's an awesome, it's awesome when you see her and the wee wains together. You know, my two grandwains. It's just fantastic, man.
Everybody needs a granny Kathy like person in their life, eh?
Absolutely. She's the glue that binds the family together. She's still like that today. She keeps us all going strong, and she's bonkers, man. She's bonkers. She believes in aliens, and she says she sees UFOs. She says there was an alien in her house one time. You know, mad, but brilliant.
But hey, who's going to argue with her, man?
Just laugh at
her. Nah, absolutely fantastic. And thank you very much for sharing a very personal, intimate story.
Listen, I always try, when if I get a platform to talk about anything to do about addiction and mental health, always try and let people know that there's a solution to it, you know. And for me, the solution is to stop using drinking drugs, because it didn't serve me, you know what I mean? And I may as well go out and run a bit, you know, because it makes me feel good about myself, it gives me purpose, it gives me meaning. And everyone is need to attribute something like that to a life, you know. Purpose and meaning is massive for each and every one is. And I think for most days, is if when we run, we get that, because it gives us that sense of community, that sense of spirit that we get when we not just run ourselves, but when we run with others, you know.
And so you may, from going from Cumbernauld area to Arbroath, where are you living now?
I'm back in Cumbernauld. So I made a conscious decision a while back. I say that, so is my story, like obviously, as I've got to the bit where I was drinking and taking drugs and talking about mental health, but eventually, go to a stage where I get into recovery. So when I talk about recovery, I eventually went to a place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and then eventually went to a place called Cocaine Anonymous. And to this day, I'm still active member in both fellowships. And I made a conscious decision when I was up in Arbroath. I moved back down the road, and I go back into recovery through somebody's example. And when I go into recovery, I went and says to myself consciously that, where's the best place that I can serve, you know, to give a wee bit back to people? And where did I do the most damage? I done the most damage in Cumbernauld. You know, that's where everybody knew me, was the big idiot. You know, I used to fall about causing mayhem. And now they know me as a big idiot who doesn't drink, who tries to help people, you know, and runs a lot.
How's that switch been, though? How have you felt about that switch from going from somebody, from your previous self to yourself now? How do you... Because you'll see people now who was Bob 20 years ago.
Absolutely, absolutely. For me, it's even more personal than that, because it doesn't just affect me. So this is obviously something really personal I'm talking about now. There's a lineage issue with it. So I've got an addictive personality, right? But it's new that I've got is I've got a family member who in particular very close to me who's struggling now and suffering. And also another one and also another one who's new in recovery through my example, you know. And that's amazing. But seeing somebody else who you love and care for destroy themselves in front of you, it's really challenging. It's really challenging. So that's why I need to continue with my journey, you know, and be the example to the person that I love so much, you know, and that's what I try and do the day, John. So what you're asking me, how am I the new compared to them? I see people the day who are still actively using, you know, and they've got a lot of respect for me because they know how much I've changed. But the other flip side with that, I know, is I've also got, and this is, and people who know me will tell you this is not me blowing my own trumpet, you know, it's like I've been very influential in helping other people within my community be the first step to get into recovery. I knew some of them. One of my mate in particular is he's 6 years clean last week, you know. His mother pal is a year next month. You know, these are guys that I grew up with, guys in my community who are all successful now. And as I said to you before, it's like what I've recognised today, John and Stephen, is like you're who you hang about with. So, you know, it's like they're all saying, it's like, show me who you hang about with and I'll show you how you'll turn out, you know. So see the people that I grew up with who are still using, now they've all changed their life through. And I'll give you an example. I was out with my mate last week who's 6 years clean, right? He's a director of his own business now. He's running. So he's a director of the business. My other big pal who he's doing really well. He's got his own landscaping business. And my other pal's a personal trainer and I've got my own business myself already. And it's like, these are the kind of things that happen through the fruits of getting yourself clean and sober, but not just clean and sober, but applying discipline in your life that you get through running. So when I go out and run, the day and I discipline myself to do it, it risks up my esteem. So I can still get anxiety at times, you know, I can still feel a bit depressed at times. And it's not that I've got depression, but I can still feel depressed. Does that make sense? You can still get feelings of being depressed, but no having depression because it's fleeting. So, for example, a family member who I love and care for does something absolutely insane stuff, you know what I mean? I don't even want to talk about it unless it's insane stuff he's doing. Mm-hmm. And I go and speak to him and I see what he does and I can get down about that. And you know, I can have a couple of days where I feel I can't be fucked running, you know, I can't be bothering it. But because I've built the discipline and the self-esteem that gets me through running, I'll still run, you know. See if I've got pain getting in my life, I run. See if my life's going excellent, I run. See if I'm having a hard day or a bad day, I still run. I always just run, you know what I mean? It's one of the most beneficial things for mental health. It also gives us the discipline, it gives us purpose, and it gives us meaning. But it also shows the people who are struggling today, running about active addiction, that there's a purpose there for them. They can go and do something. So the guy in particular I'm talking about, he's struggling now, but he knows about how fit I'm at, and he wants to emulate that, you know what I mean? And he tries his best, you know, and it's just hard, but it's stuff that I need to do because I need to be trying to be that example, you know. I've got that within my power to try and be an example to people.
You can hear the passion in your voice, man.
I live it, and I want the best for people because we all live the human experience, you know. We're all humans, and we all got our own purpose and meaning. And see, when you try your best to show people that life, you know, that destroying yourself through drinking drugs, you know, whatever high any drink or drug gives you, you know, especially if you're an addict, if you have a few beers, that's all right, and you've got an issue and a couple of wines. All my mates who are run with that, so they've not got that addictive personality, that's fine. But see if it's taking away every good out of your life, you know, taking away your wains, taking away your job, taking away your purpose, taking away your mean, taking away your health, you know. And that's the thing with addiction, with John and Stephen, it's that it'll take away everything out of your life before it kills you. You know, it doesn't kill you instantly. It takes away your job, it takes away your wife, it takes away all your value in life, your finances, everything. And then once it strips you, everything, it might take your life, or it might just let you suffer for a lot longer. And that's what I try and show people, that's what that's all about. And if you take this life, you get a pair of running shoes on, you go and run a bit, you feel good about yourself, you know. And I try and emulate and get people to train, you know, because it's the best thing for mental health, and it's the best thing for people who've got an addictive personality, because it gives them a purpose to go and do something, you know.
I just want to echo John's point around about sharing all that you've shared already. It's been amazing to hear you speak with passion about it, and obviously stuff that's really personal, Bob. I know seeing the point of serving back and feeling like you're contributing, you're active in that, you know, circle.
Aye. Because it's so there's a, like, in a recovery community, you've got, obviously, see where it'd be addiction, right? The problem you've got with addiction is it's very selfish and self-centered, right? Because you become the, you know, the centre of your own, your own universe, and all you want to do is get high, right? But you're no think that the consequences of those run about you, right? So what it does with the recovery community, it flips that in itself, you know, it flips it around and it says, right, what can you give back today? You know, and there's like kind of three main elements to it. There's the idea of joining a local group, you know, and there's a recovery group that I'm part of. And then within that recovery group, you know, you start doing things to try and help others. So you invite people in, you know, you put a hand out of friendship, you make a cup of tea, you make a cup of coffee, you give you a biscuit, you read that bit of literature, you try and help people. And if you can go through that as a programme, you go through it, it's a 12-step programme. And more importantly, once you do that, what's the service that you can do within the recovery community? So where I've been very blessed is, in the recovery community, I had a position last year. I had to resign for it just because personal issues, because some things that were running about us. But I went to America the last few years, and we were going to America to bring the conscience of the stuff that was happening there in America. So I'd got to connect with people, you know, throughout the world. And that's the exact opposite of addiction. What addiction does is it isolates you yourself in the middle, in a room yourself, using yourself and only thinking about yourself. And then I was connecting with people in Arizona, people from Texas, and they were putting me up. It was an amazing experience, you know. I'm going to America, and I go to America, and my pals of America come here inside with me. And the amazing thing about recovery is that, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. I go to Texas last year, and I get into this room with this
lady, what was her name again? I can't just say it was Candace, right? So I'm walking with Candace, who's a black female from Detroit, you know, and she says to me, she says, Bob. So obviously in Scotland, everybody calls me Bob, but you can't say that in America because they go, Boab, you know, they can't get around it, you know. So they have to say, I'm Bob. So when I get her, I says, Bob. She goes, right, Bob. She says, tell me a bit about Scotland, you know, and I'm taking this with great pride, you know. I says, well, on average, you know, I says, we take Merkel cane per square mile than anywhere else in the world, you know. I says, we're the most savage at taking drugs. But I says, we drink like fish, you know. I says, you watch any film, you see the Scotsman drinking away, you know. I'm talking, take terrorists with great pride. I says, we eat lots of deep fried food. I says, and we swear a lot. And she's from Detroit, you know, the other side of the tracks. She says, you're just black, you know. She says to me, you're just black. And then my mate Johnny from Arizona, he's Mexican. He says, oh, you're just fucking Mexican. He says, so what do you reckon? Because the cultures are very similar, you know. And he says to me, and this is what we say to her, it says, there's no discrimination with pigmentation of skin run about addiction, you know. It'll come for anybody, you know. So you've either go to it, you've no, you know, it doesn't discriminate. And that's what I found it funny, you know, that speaking to this beautiful black woman for Detroit, who's just telling me I was black, and my mate Johnny from Arizona, who is an immigrant from Mexico, just telling me I'm just Mexican. And he says that, he says, I'm Scots, he's been to Scotland, and he says, they're just the same, you know. I says, you know, just crazy, that's what it's.
But you know what though, it's true, it's the same the world over.
Of course it is.
The same issues are there the world over, so everybody's facing with that, but everybody needs to find the timing has to be there for people, or they've got to recognise it within themselves. And it's great, I guarantee there'll be people listening into this, Bob, going, this is exactly what I need. You know? Really appreciate your time coming on to speak to us.
Okay, where's
your favourite place in the world?
Oh,
to put your gutties on and go for a run.
Oh, right, okay, right. So, but believe it or not, I remember I was actually reading a couple of questions you sent for us, and I'm very, very, very boring with this answer, because actually one of my favourite places in the world to run is actually in Cumbernauld. So there's the Paris Rig Trails, and I don't know if you know the Paris Rig, it's about 3 miles up the road from where I stay. And there's a loop about 5 miles, right? And see, when you got into these trails, there's a park run. So there's Paris Rig Park Run. So if you've never done the Paris Rig Park Run, you will see what I'm talking about. It's just a beautiful wee bit that's outside of Cumbernauld, but it still comes under Cumbernauld, if that makes sense, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's just these beautiful trails that you can do. And there's like a 5 mile loop of trails that I do. And sometimes I double up sometimes. Sometimes I go a wee bit further afield and I can back to it. So I really like that. Also, there's down near to Seif, there's a place called, my mate Vinny, me and him run this a lot, the Banton Loop, it's called. And it's about a 7 mile loop it is, and it goes up through Kilsyth, it goes out the back up towards Banton, and it comes back along the Forth and Clyde Canal. That's another loop I like to do. Another good one I like about the Fife Coastal route. So you've got the bit up next to Ely. Is it Ely up there? So I've done that with my mate Vinny. So he's got a caravan up there. So I've been up there a few times with Vinny, and I've done that loop up there, which is really good, and out and back. And also, if you're asking me, like, if I was to go like abroad, I like the south of Spain. So see, like Benalmádena, doing next to Torremolinos, I like the long straights along the coast and back again, you know. So that's probably one of my favourite places to run. When I went to Arizona last year in Texas, it was far too warm to run. You know, I've not done an industrial state run, that was about as good as it go when we went to Texas. But Arizona, I just gave up. I didn't even bother with it, you know.
That's far too hot and humid there compared far to Cumbernauld anyway.
That's it, man. Exactly, mate.
That was good. That was four for the price of one. Cheers, Bob. And like, it's how great is it when one of your favourite places to run is right on your doorstep? Do you know? It's like, I have all these beautiful up Glencoe and all like that, but you maybe only get there, you know, once a month or something like that. But it's there. Sometimes it's almost focus on what is on your doorstep and make it beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Brilliant. And then, do you know Cumbernauld now, and you're a member of the run club there?
Aye, so I'm currently a member of the Cumbernauld DEC. Mm-hmm. So I've been in there for a while. I know you've got a couple of pals on there, Paul and Goddard. Paul and Jerry have been in there, obviously you know the two of them. But I've got a lot of good pals in there, my mate Davey, Hugh Martin, Vinny. So Vinny Carroll's actually a really, really guy that inspired me a lot to get into running, because I remember maybe about 10 years ago, I met Vinny in Tesco. And the backstory was that was before I came into a running club, and I came back down here. Was I tried to start a wee running club up with Cumberland Old AC. It took off no bad, but it didn't take off as good as I'd like to. So I wanted to get a wee bit more competitive. So I heard that Kirky Olympians, they had a really good team. So what happened was I went out to Kirky and I met a guy called Vinny Carroll. Now Vinny was, I've just done a Manchester Marathon, I know we'll talk about that in due course, but wow. Vinny was, he's 55 and he just done a tour 57 on it, so he's a really good runner, you know, and that was a PB for him. And me and him have been pals for more or less day one. And met him in Tesco, and you know it's like when you meet runners and you've got a passion for running, you sit and you just talk for an hour and run it. And I remember at the time, I was married at the time, I'm divorced now, but the wife I was with at the time, she says, "Oh, I'm fucking leaving you, she pissed off." We spoke for an hour that night talking about running, you know what I mean? And I was hooked, you know what I mean? I went to Kirky and I get really, really good within a year, you know, no world class. I've laughed before I came on the podcast. I was looking at kind of some of your past guests, you know, Jasmine Paris, 100K winner, all these. I said, "No, we've got fucking Bob Keenan on here." I said, my times aren't anywhere near as good as these guys. But for me, it was like a goat, like really good times in a short period of time, you know, for somebody that never came to an athletic background, you know. So Cumbernauld's my base now, but I don't want to... I still run for Cumbernauld, but I don't do as many track sessions now with Cumbernauld, because I run with a group there up next to Muirhead. So a guy called Rob Souter. Rob is he was the guy that was the first 50 back at the Alloa Half Marathon, even though he's nearly 60. So he was the first 50 back. So I run with him because it just suits my running schedule. We run about 5:30, but 5:25 to 6, we do a session. I'm back in the house for about 6:30, 6:45. You know, I've got a window cleaning business, so that's ideal for me. So what I do is I then go out and get my collecting. But when I was running with Cumberland all day, so, you know, and I love the guys and that, but we don't start a bit later. So we started at 7:00. And then the time we got started, it was probably about 20 to 8. So I wasn't up the road for about 9:00, you know, and that wasn't really suiting my running needs because of obviously my collecting I had to do and that. But I mean, but the boys are brilliant. I still run for the club and I'll probably always run for Cumbernauld AC, you know.
Fantastic. No, it needs to fit in with the logistics of life, doesn't it? And sometimes the stars don't align, other times they do, but you can tell you're still got that tightness with them. I laughed at you, you know, the inter-club rivalry that goes on between clubs anywhere, and that's all part of the crack, isn't it? It's almost that little competitive edge that you spoke about that you had when you were younger and still have now, apparently, is an important little edge to it, isn't it? It's like, never let that get away, that little inter-club rivalry. Love it. So in terms then of your progression, you've spoken about it couple of times in terms of how you're laying down some pretty reasonable times. How did the progression look in terms of through the distances? Do you know what 10k up to half marathon, and then, you know, when was your first exposure to the marathon distance?
So I did, right, so I'll start with the marathon first, I'll get out of the road now, right? So the first marathon I did was 9 years ago, right? I've only done 2 marathons, so I did one 9 years ago. And then what happened with me, I got into a wee bit of a rut, you know, last year. I had a few injuries. I was doing a bit of bodybuilding. I felt like a love for running a wee bit, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of it was just doing it. Just, there's a bit of rivalry going on, and I just couldn't be bothered. I got sick of it for a while. So what I did is I took a step back, and my good pal Vinny, he went in to run, started running with the guys there at Muirhead, Gap Course, with Rob Suit on that. He says, "Do you want to come here?" So when I came here, now a lot of these guys are really good marathon runners. So they go, Rob's nearly 60, and I think he's 2:48 or something. He's 2:48. It's fucking excellent times for his age, you know. So I was intrigued about coming in a few sessions with him to try and get me back into running again. And that's what I did. I went over and I started doing a few sessions. But there was something in me says, and to keep this going, I know what I'm like. I get really good at something, and then what I do is I fall away from it. So I needed something that was going to give me the fear. So they were signing up for marathons. I went, right, I'm going to sign up for a marathon again. Now, I'd say it's 9 years ago, right? I did a marathon down in Jersey. And I say Jersey, no New Jersey, Jersey, as in down at the Channel Islands. And I did it. And I still done an all right time. I was 3:04, which is still a no bad time. But I remember after it saying, never fucking again. I says, no way am I ever doing that again. And I stuck to my word for 9 years. I says, I'm not doing it. But I knew that I had to get my love back for running again. And that's what happened. I went to the sessions and I started doing the sessions. I then gave myself the fear. I signed up for Manchester Marathon. And then I just trained like I'm a savage, you know. I just started getting right back in about it. Had a few injuries because I'm quite a big guy. So I'm like, then I think because I was doing a bit of bodybuilding, I was probably about 14 stone. Thankfully, I'm doing it under 13 again, but I'm probably 12 and a half, just a wee bit more than that. So I'm back to like, kind of no bad. I probably could do another stone off, you know what I mean? But what happened to me was I maintained the training and I gave me the fear to go. So that's got me back into doing the marathon. And I did all right. As you know, I went to down to Manchester. My coach, you know, I've also kind of two coaches. I've had Alistair McFarlane from Cumbernauld. I always ask him stuff for advice because he Rob's the guy I've been running with lately. I asked him for a bit of advice running about the marathon. And he says, what do you want to do? I said, well, I want a sub three. I says, you know, I know the statistics, less than 4% of people, you know, men, and less than 1% of women get a sub three. So I want to be in that sub three club. So I says, right. So I wanted to get the sub three club done. And what happened was he says to me, right, go out and stick to 6:40 pace, right? He says, if you can stick to 6:40 pace, you'll be fine. So I done a bit of research. He says, right, the first 10 miles, he says, just be slightly at 6:40, bring it down the next 10 miles, and then for the last six, just try and maintain it, right? So that was my plan of attack. So I went out no bad. I was like sticking to the 6:40. I was feeling all right, you know. First 2 miles, and that sounds insanity, but people might agree with this if they listen to it. I kind of felt bored the first couple of miles because it felt comfortable for me, you know, 6:40. I know it's a lot of people say, no, it's fast, and it is fast, but, you know, but compared to some, to me, obviously elites, and that's what we do. We compare ourselves to the guys in front of us, but we forget about the 90-odd% of people behind us that can't even get anywhere close to any times, you know what I mean? So I'm very blessed that I can run that fast, you know, And I was running 6:40 and I was doing all right and I was feeling fine. The first couple of miles felt a bit boring. I got to about 8 mile. I was starting to still felt good. I was running with Vinny. I then kind of took care of a couple of the club mates and I got to about the halfway mark, still feeling good. Then I got to about 18 and started to feel it, you know. But I was still maintaining that pace and just a wee bit quicker than it. And then I go to the 20-mile mark. And I remember reading the article, you know, and I forgot about how bad it was 9 years ago, you know, and I get to the 20-mile marker, and I'm saying, I start swearing to myself. I say, this is fucking sad now, you know. and it was, you know, and I was fine. And then what I recognise is from mile 18 to mile 26, see the amount of people that pull up, it's unbelievable. You know, it really is, you know. And what I seen, and it was a thing in my head, I'm very driven, you know, because of obviously my background and competitive. And I was saying to myself, don't you fucking stop. And I'm swearing to myself, and I sat, and I've got two grandmains, and my boy was doing supporting us that day. And I'm saying stuff like crazy stuff like, if you fucking stop, I says, you're a failure to your son. You're the worst grander out. You know, I was like pure torture myself. And I was like, I'm no stop. You know, that way I was like pure torture myself, like just not to stop. And I kept pushing it, and I was looking at the pace. And then I got to about 24 miles, and by this time I'm seeing there's people falling out left, right, and centre. And I'm like, I'm no stopping. I could feel no the pains. I had a salt tablet. I was taking my gels, and I was all right, you know. And cardio wise, I felt all right, but my body's starting to fall apart now. You know what I mean? It's like I'm running through treacle the last 2 miles, and then I remember the feeling, you know. I get round the corner, and then I see the straight in the distance. I look at my watch, and it was like 2:53 or something. Something like that anyway, you know. And I went, fuck, I'm going to smash this 3 hour barrier, and I ran through, and I done a 2:55 and 13 seconds, and I remember the feeling, it, you know, it's like, it was the greatest feeling in the world, and my boy was at the other side, but he's 18, so he's had a few drinks. We left him at mile 8, and he was all right. Now he's at mile 26, I'm thinking about 20 miles to 26, where the fuck is he? I've not seen him, you know, and I'm thinking, he's lost in Manchester, and how am I going to tell my mom and his partner that they've lost him and all that, and he comes to the end, I go through the hangway, and all he hears, ah! He's like, on you, he's like, on you fucking go, he says, you're a legend, I love you, he tried to get the parrot to grab me, he ended up, he got 20 quid off me, I left him my late, he was all right, Then he got to the thing, after me, he went to shop, he got off, he got about 5-6 catches. And all the crowd went about, we're all laughing at this crazy young Scotsman shouting at his dad. And it was just awesome, man. It was an awesome experience. And it was one of the best days of my life, you know. I went back to the hotel, and Vinny was there, and my boy was there, and I sat, you know. And for anybody that's, you know yourself, guys, you're runners, you know, the accomplishment that we get when we achieve the goals, you know, that was a 5-month in the making process. So when I got to the end of that, I was looking about, and my boy was there, and my mate, one of my best mates, Vinny, was there, and, you know, and I went, I couldn't believe that was done. You know, I went for a 304 down to a 255, which is a nine years of a difference. So it took 9 minutes after it. I must be a minute every year. I didn't even recognise that, to talk that back now. You know, and I sat there, and I just had that moment of clarity and peace, you know, that it was all worth it, you know. And it was just awesome, man. So that was the marathon, guys, you know. I'll try and pause a bit, because, you know, once I start, I can't stop. The other distances I've done, you know, for 5K. Yeah, on you go.
You've opened the door for the Manchester Marathon, eh, John?
Oh, definitely, man. 100%. 100%. Aye. The going round that final straight and round that corner.
Right.
I was about an hour after that when I did it, but I had the same feeling of accomplishment. There's nothing like it, man. We're talking about, seeing you talking earlier on about drink and drugs and all that sort of stuff. There's nothing like that high you get for running. You know, none I've ever experienced, man. It's just a surge that goes through your whole body and your brain. It's just that amazing feeling of being alive, isn't it?
It's greater than any drug, you know. It's greater than any sexual experience I've had. It's just that peace and, you know, that sense of achievement. It's the greatest high you can get, you know. The best, you know, analogy I've ever heard is somebody talking about running, you know, and especially racing. You know, they says to me, it's like a hangover in reverse. He says you go through the pain and the turmoil of the race, but the high that you get the other side, it's better than any high you'll get for any drink or drug. And that's the truth. And this is a guy who's took, as I've mentioned, took lots of drinks and drugs. So, it's awesome, guys. It was awesome. It was just amazing experience.
And if you think of that, when you were describing going through the sort of mile markers and coming up to a mile 20, when you're like, oh, wait a wee minute, what's happening here? And that quickly gets replaced by that, I don't know, it's like sort of that build-up to that crescendo of joy, isn't it, that you experience when you're coming in. And the fact that your laddie's there the other side of the fence as well, man, it's just brilliant, all that stuff. I love it, man. You described that really well, Bob. Thank you.
Aye. And I'll finish with another point here.
Sure.
As I say to you, I came for a family of non-athletes. So my dad is like, you probably see my dad, Johnny's, and he goes to the same football ground as you do. And you'll see, next time you see him, you'll see me with him. And he's definitely no athletic. But he went, so he finds out, he goes, what's your time anyway? So I tell him the time, but he doesn't have a clue what marathon times are. I've done a 2:55. So he goes into his work, right? So he goes into his work the next day, and he says to his pals, he goes, aye, my boy was doing the marathon. So there's a guy, what was his name? Wasn't he? Why? What was his? Doesn't matter. Boy called, a guy from Wales that works with my dad. He's been doing marathons for years. He says, so what time did your boy get? So he says, 2:55. And he goes back to my dad, for fuck's sake, you did what? 2:55? He goes, I've done about 30, 40 marathons. The best I've ever done is 3:20. Tell him that he'd done exceptionally good. So my dad comes home the next day, and he phones me. He says, so when are you doing a marathon again? I says, well, I'm thinking about going down to London next year. I says, I'm hoping for my good for age time. I says, they've shortened it, so there's a good chance I'll get into London next year for my good for age. He says, I didn't want to do another marathon, but now I've got the buzz after that, so I'm going to do one again. So he says, I think I'll come down and see you. You know what I mean? My dad's never, ever been interested in anything today, other than the athletics or anything I've ever took. But see, once his pal tell him that that's a really good time, he might come and see me. But he did the caveat, John, and you'll laugh at us. He says, but only if Celtic are not playing a big game that week.
So about priorities, man.
Of course, man. That's brilliant. So that, well, I think you've described your Manchester experience exceptionally well there. A wee bump in the road at 20 miles. But hung on in there, kept things together by the soons of it. And you talked about you were fueling, you were salt tabbing. Was it a day? Was it week, was it the week after, before London?
The week before, it was the week before London, aye.
Yeah, yeah. And was it all right, conditions and everything like that?
Conditions were fine, they were actually perfect. There was that, yeah. They were perfect. It wasn't too warm, it wasn't too cold, there was a wee bit of wind, but it was very light. It was made us perfect conditions.
And what did you think of the whole sort of setup and the route and things like that? Yeah, everything in
fantastic. I thought it was excellent. So because I did Jersey before, so that was like probably similar to Inverness, but I've not done Inverness, but many people have told me about it. Mm-hmm. Once you're at the Troon, there's not really much, you know, and it was the same in Jersey. Once you're at the wee villages, it was like there wasn't really many crowds about. But where do you go to Manchester? There was one bit in particular, round about the mile 16. I know you've done the race before, John, so you know what I'm talking about. So you do, there's only really one hill in Manchester, it's round about 16, 17 mile mark. So I got this hill, and I can't even remember the name of the wee tune. I take a left and I go in the corner, right? You know, I swear to God, and I've seen it in London and all, and I know London's going to be like that on steroids, you know what I mean, because of the size of the race. But this, to me, was the most mind-blowing thing of the marathon. We're running this corner, and the crowd were just on top of you, you know, like, come on, the lads cheering you and pushing you, and it was just awesome, man. You know, it was just such an awesome experience, and definitely, I'd love to do more city marathons. You know, I'd love to do London in the future. I'd like to do Berlin. You know, a few of the boys that are on me, especially wee Jerry Craig, he's done 107 marathons or something. He's done all the majors, you know what I mean? And now that I know that he's done that, I'm starting to get a wee buzz, maybe one day. You know?
Planting a wee seed there, I can tell. It was the news today was the man, the London Marathon ballot had 840,000 entries. That was just throughout the day. That's when we're recording this for people, which is a world record in terms of number of entries into a ballot, beating London for last year when it was like 560,000. So they've almost got 300,000 more ballot applications this year. But when you run a 255, you've got a nice buffer for your good for age. So you'll be grand. You'll be grand, Bob. What an exceptional day. And was it, you know, just a case of teaming up with your support crew afterwards? And
absolutely, that's what we did. We obviously, I don't drink anymore, so my big mate Vinny, you know, he watches the show all the time, and listens in anyway. Crack guy. So he's but he was after the drink for a while, but him and my boy, and the two of them end up back on it. Oh my god, the two of them. I don't know who was the youngest, who was acting the youngest. The two of them are paid nurses, you know what I mean? And I was the old dad trying to look after him, even though Vinny's 10 years older than me, you know what I mean? So now we had a great night. It was awesome, man. It was absolutely awesome.
Fantastic.
So Bob, what's sub 3 in the bag? Next running target for you?
I've gone to Silver Nose on Friday. I might do pretty well at that. The last time I done a 5K, low 17s. So if I can pip under that, you know, I'd be happy. But if I do run about that, I'll be okay. You know, just coming after training in a marathon.
Just for people listening's benefit, Silver Nows is the Scottish 5K Championships down the seaside in Edinburgh.
Aye. So I can't remember the name of the race. There's a particular name for it, but I'm not sure the name of the race. You get a pineapple. If you win it, if you're a winner, you get a pineapple. And I was saying to some of the guys who don't run, you know, they run, but they're not really as fast as some is. And I was telling them that to get under 17 minutes, you'll be lucky to get the top 100. These guys are awesome. You know, they're really the best in Scotland. So it's one of the races that at least you'll get pulled round, because you've always got somebody with a really good standard to keep you going, you know.
Aye, a lot of PBs get hit that particular. Is it a weekend?
It's Friday coming, Friday night. I think the boy, is it Burkett, what's his name, is it for Central, he got the world record on it, so that course, so the part run course anyway, so.
Wow, that'll be interesting, we'll be keeping a keen eye. By the time this goes out, we'll know all the results, so, and we'll know what Bob hit, so. I'm going for 16:59, fucking 16:59. But a strong tailwind the whole way.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, mate. If I do 16 then, I'll be over the moon.
Fucking right. Positive mental attitude.
That's it, mate. That's it.
In about it, Bob. We always ask our guests who come on for a favourite bit of running kit as well. What is the bit indispensable bit of running kit that you own that's never lets you down? You got anything in mind? Oh.
I've actually got a couple of suggestions on that. So I think for me, because I do a lot of climbing as well. So mm-hmm. I do, so that's probably one of the questions you've got to ask about other outdoor activities I do. And that's one of the things I do is that I climb a lot of Munros. I think I've done about 157, 58, you know, 282. Mm-hmm. A couple of the boys that run, climb me there about 200. One in particular, my mate Matthew, he's about 203 or something. So where I really like is that the running watches nowadays, you know, I've got the Garmin, is it the Fenix 6, I think is, the older model, the 7's out now. You can download maps for that. So mm-hmm. I can use it for my running needs. It tells me my pace that I'm going at. You know, it gives me my data that I can upload to Strava and so forth. But it also gives me the option of downloading maps. So when I'm out doing the Munros, I can follow the watch to get me around the routes that I need to go. Because when we started out doing Munros at first, it was all the local ones like Ben Lomond and, you know, wandering about the central belt. You didn't need a map. But see, nowadays, because where we're going now, you know, you're out up at the Fannix, you know, and you're up the top of Scotland, the ones out by Ullapool, you know, every single one of them are so remote, you need to have good navigation for it, you know. And so the watch helps with that, plus the phone, plus actually maps, you know, because that's the way it is now, because they're so hard now. So that's definitely one of my things that I would always have now, you know, because of that. So anything with GPS on it, you know, watches. I like Garmin, most people do, but there's other good watches out there, you know. But I think the other bit of kit that I swear by nowadays, you know, and I think helped me massively in the marathon, is any carbon-plated shoes, you know. They're definitely game changers, you know. Ooh. I'm currently into the New Balance ones, this Evo ones, some of the fourth version. So I've got them, and I ran the marathon in them, so obviously I've got a PB, so I'm swear by them and now. But I'm also looking at the Adidas ones, and I've had the Alpha Flies in it, which I liked, but I think they're quite clumpy. Does that make sense? You know, they're a bit loud. They're a loud hit when you hit them. So I kind of tried something else. I've got a pair of New Balance there, and I really liked them. So I've had a few pairs of New Balance there, so I'm kind of swaying me towards New Balance, but I'm going to give the Adidas a try, I know.
Okay, well, hopefully there's a few agents listening, and they can conjure up a pair. He's available for
I'd be very grateful.
He's available for signing up, is he? He's a free agent at the moment. So New Balance, if you're listening, Adidas in about him. So he's a fellow schwanker, John.
And I love the fact that you ask for one thing, like one place to run, one bit of kit, and Bob just battered me multiple answers. So I love that. What about nutrition? Running these fast speeds, Bob, how do you feel that? You know, especially if you've come for that marathon 9 years ago, how were you feeling that end compared to how you fueled Manchester this year?
I remember I thought this question was going to go up, and I was just going to pass on it because my diet's probably shocking for the times that I do get. You know, if I go to that my own point, that's my Achilles heel. You know, it's that I do like a wee takeaway now and again, maybe too much, you know what I mean? And when I say to myself, I'll burn it off, but really I should just be cutting it out. But what did help me in the marathon, you know, what helps me kind of on race day is I've tried and tested. I just like porridge. Porridge is one of the best things that I take in the morning before I run. A wee bit of pineapple, I like pineapple and all. But anything we kind of less condensed carbs, does that make sense? You know, so we'd kind of more single kind of, yeah, carbs like kind of porridge is probably the best thing that I would go for. I do like a wee bit of fruit as well. But on the marathon, but John, I was quite wise with the gels. So I would take a gel every 5 miles, you know, and I think that massively helped as well. But nutrition wise, it could be a lot better with my diet, to be honest with you, mate.
What gels?
SIS ones I had. They were all right. They were not too bad, you know.
Aye,
so a lot of people swear by them, but the Coca-Cola ones, I just did a mix of different flavours. I tell you about my years of abuse, man. I used to drink stuff that was you should have drank, so I don't care the flavour. It's just going to do it all right. I've destroyed all my nerves, you know, all my taste buds.
Aye, I see what you mean. It's like, this is all right. Didn't even know what flavour it is.
Definitely.
Wowed down already. And then what about at the other end? What's your reward, Scran? A takeaway?
Oh, I love a takeaway, man. So that's the most horrendous stuff. So I still like a kebab. I still like a babies. I still like a chippy. Chinese a lot. It's no good for you. I think it's excellent, you know.
Okay, so has that been every night since Manchester you've partaken?
Let's just put it this way. There's been too many.
Okay. Wait, you can reel it back in due course. You hate to kind of enjoy those moments. I always compare at the end of a marathon, there's somebody with a big bag like a carrot on a stick that's full of all my nonsense food, and it
A lot of sugar. After the marathons, a lot of sugary stuff and a lot of soft drinks, you know, and full fat ones and that, and all. So, it was good.
Perfect. Sounds like the perfect remedy to me. And you touched a wee bit, Bob, on Monroe bagging. Is that the other thing that you like doing, getting out up on the hills?
I just think it's the freedom into it. It's back to the stuff I was talking about at the start of the interview. You know, it's when I was in active addiction, I was disconnected. You know, I was like, I was in a room myself, using myself. That was it. That was the end result for us. So what I had to do was flip that around the opposite of that. And the opposite of that was getting out into nature, you know, and climbing. I'd done a bit of cold water therapy, obviously done a bit of running, and just climbing. And the freedom I get when I go is, I mean, Scotland to me is the most beautiful country in the world, you know, it really is. And see, once you go up north and you get beyond like Ullapool, up that kind of section, and you climb the hills up there. I've done a group of hills called the Fisherfield. And I'll tell you the backstory with that. It's my obsessive thing. You know, what you'll find with most people with addiction issues, we get very obsessive about stuff. And I remember I met this lassie on the hills, and we did four Monroes, and she says to me, "You've not done any hills till you've done the Fisherfield, the Fannix, and anything beyond Ullapool." So that was a challenge to me. So I said, "Is that right?" You know, so what I did is I went out and I researched them. And I remember, you know, learning about these hills at the Fisherfield. So I drive up the night before, and I stay in Inverness for a night, and then I go the next morning. I've got a 30-mile drive, and I park up at a car park called the Corrie Halley Car Park. I know that I've got a 27-mile loop today around these five Monroes. So it used to be six. One get demoted because it's a fit short of a Monroe. You know, I think anything about 3,000 feet is a Monroe. I think this was 2,999 foot. So we're demoted. So two of them get demoted in the last 15 years. So we got my dairies, five and those one, it's just been demoted. I go out, right, and I like my own company, guys. It's like, because I told you, I've isolated my room before. I used to use myself, so I don't mind being myself, you know what I mean? And what happens, I go out onto this trail, and I start going run it, right? Very competitive. I might go run it at quite a quick time. But I wasn't running it, I was just kind of hyping it really hard. So I'm up in Ullapool, and he's going run the Fisherfield. And it was the most awesome experience of my life, guys. It was fantastic. I walked for 6 hours, right, and I never seen another human being. When the last time can you remember walking for 6 full hours without seeing another human being? I got up one of these hills, I get the plateaus, you know, and I could run the tap in them. And there's one Monroe up there, which is the most remote mountain in the whole of Scotland. And I remember how the challenge I tried to get this thing. I came back down the other side, and I came back out. You know, and it's just a great experience. Anybody that's never climbed hills, you know, and never been out in nature, you know, to that degree, and anybody that has done it will tell you how great it is. You know, it's a sense of freedom that you get. And our countries, we're very blessed that we stay where we stay. You know, Scotland is genuinely one of the most beautiful, and I'm biased, to me it's the most beautiful country in the world, you know. And I remember up these hills looking out and feeling so insignificantly small. You know, they talk about Scotland being a small country, but see, when you're out in nature like that, you see how small you really are, you know, and see all the problems that we've got around with Wains and Jobs, and, you know, have we got enough miles in running, you know, stuff like that becomes so insignificant, you know, when you're out there, you know, and it's the freedom and the peace that you get second to none. So that's why I love climbing Monroes, you know, but I'm very competitive. I want to get them all in it one day, you know.
Love it. Thank you for that. So you've certainly found the outdoors, you know, over this time, whether it's running, walking, cold water therapy.
I've not been doing as much of that lately. It's a bit cold, you know.
I'm not sure about that. Well, never tried that one myself. But thank you, Bob. That's 100. What are you doing? You say 150 something, you reckon?
I think I'm 156, 157, round about that. So.
Okay. There's something about just collecting things, things that is addictive, and that, you know, is a positive addiction to have. Fucking Monroes. I love the fact that some have got demoted. That's like St. Johnson this season, by the way. I think we're heading that way, Bob. Okay, John, are we on to the final straight? Yeah?
We're on the front. So, a couple of questions to go, Bob.
Important ones.
On you go, Stephen.
There's been a couple of, you've used a couple of dialect words already. And just for listeners' benefit, Wains are children. Bob referred to Wains and Grand Wains a few times. Yeah. So that's children and grandchildren. Because no, everybody is for the central belt of Scotland, and that comes for me, they're bairns.
Ira Burns, aye.
Burns. I think are the Burns in Arbroath? They've got a wee speaking up in Arbroath.
I think it could well be Burns up there, aye. Absolutely.
Ah, you're right. Anyway, just a dialect dictionary word from Bob that is a phrase or a word, something that means something, or maybe doesn't he? To throw in the Young Hearts Run Free dialect dictionary.
Aye, well, I've got a belter for you. So I've no belter. That's a good one and all, but it's the one that I have got is the word dreepy. Would you like me to enlighten you what a dreepy is?
Spell it first.
I think, you're asking the wrong guy to spell because I'm not the greatest, but I think it's D-R-E-E-P-Y, dreepy.
Okay, I've no clue. John, you got a clue?
Never heard dreepy.
Right, so for anybody running about the central belt, especially Cumbernauld, maybe Glasgow, right? So this is the best way to describe it. You're hanging off the side of a garage or a wall and you let go. It's called a dreepy. That makes sense? So you're hanging. You're hanging up. Well, usually, back in the day, I used to get chased with the police. So when we jump their fences, your carriages, and if you're hanging off, about to come from one height to the bottom height, okay. When you're hanging off, you let go, it's called a dreepy.
So it's like parkour?
Like parkour, but it's just, imagine hanging off of any object and then letting go. That is known as a dreepy.
Imagine.
There you go.
So I'm not sure. I might bust my ankle here, but I hate to let go to get away.
Aye, pretty much that. So when we were young, we used to play stupid games. You would go on a bridge, right? Go up a bridge and you would see how high you could go without breaking your ankles and letting go. And the letting go bit was called a dreepy.
We are not endorsing anybody to go and do a dreepy the night.
Please do not do
dreepy. This is our disclaimer.
Once you get into your 40s or above, do not dreepy up anything.
That indeed is a belter, and it's a brand new one to me. So
there you go.
Thank you for the D's were needing another entry. So there you go.
There you go.
A dreepy.
That's a high benchmark for the D benchmark to beat that in.
Oh, man.
And Bob, our final question is a musical one, and that we ask all our guests to contribute a song or a track that means something to them, that motivates them, makes them feel good or whatever. What song is Bob Keenan going to enter in?
I love this, John. It was such a hard one for me, this one, because I've got such a love for music and there's lots of songs that attribute good things to, you know. So this one's probably a wee bit left field. So there was a band called Ride. I don't know if you've heard of them before. So Ride done a song called Leave Them All Behind, you know. And it's very, very prominent to me because when I was going through my addiction issues, you know, and I done my move up to Arbroath, you know, this song meant so much to me, you know, because I had to leave a lot of people behind at that particular time, you know. So probably Ride, Leave Them All Behind. And if anybody listens to it, it's a great instrumentally. The start of it's just awesome. You know, it's a guitar kind of riff that goes on for about 3 minutes before the actual lyrics kick in. It's just brilliant, man. You know, and a very underrated band as well. They never kind of reached to the heights that they probably could have. So anybody that's listening, have a wee listen.
I must admit, I've heard of the band, but I don't think I know that track. So, the message in the title is quite a powerful one for what you're talking about. So thank you very much. And I look forward to listening to that. As soon as I'm finished this, I'm going to go and listen to that. So thank you very much for that, Bob. And not just thank you for that. I want to say a massive thank you to your granny, Kathy, because without Kathy, you might not be sitting here speaking to us. Do you know
that's
what I mean?
It's a fair assessment, John.
Aye. So God bless Granny Cathy and God bless you, Bob Keenan, for coming along and speaking to us tonight. I've thoroughly enjoyed your chat. I love it when folk are honest, open, transparent, inspirational. And you've ticked all the boxes for me tonight, my man. So thank you so much. Thank you. Been brilliant. Stephen.
Yeah. Just to echo what John says, that's been a really interesting hour or so. It's flown past, which is a testimony to just how captivating your story was. And I think you said something that really hit home about your Manchester Marathon. You know, one of the best days of my life was the day that I ran under 3 hours. That to me just was filled with how much non-running stuff went into that as well. Yeah. So you also put a lack of effort into the training block, et cetera, et cetera. But there was more to it than that. And that kind of manifested at that moment, you crossing that finishing line. I was there with you, man. You know, power to you for getting that one nailed. I think there's more to come. And I look forward to seeing what that is. I enjoyed a run out with you. Really enjoyed a run out with you around the parks in Glasgow. Back a couple of months ago, and enjoyed speaking to you then. I thought that Bob's got a story. You know, that's going to be super interesting. People will love to hear that. They definitely will have loved listening to you, as John and I have as well. And we can't wait to see what's next for Big Bob, or the Big Idiot, as you called yourself. can't wait. Thank you so much, Bob.
It's been great. Thanks, you guys. I really appreciate you having me on. Hopefully, it'll resonate with somebody, because somebody on here might have an issue with some of the stuff that I spoke about, you know. And if they do, you know, you can get my socials and they can contact me. And I can have if I can get back to them, I'll get back to them and I'll bother them, you know.
Just let it fly.